Well, Mike, next week is the election, and their worries and anxieties abound over the outcome, particularly of the presidential election. Climate change has not been a central theme of the Harris campaign or many of the other campaigns that have been covered nationally, other than the contrast between it recognizing it as a serious problem, versus the Republicans who mock it or dismiss it. Drill, baby, drill is their tagline. So let's start with what's coming up here in the Pacific Northwest. There are four ballot measures in the state of Washington to cut back or scale back the Climate Commitment Act in Washington. So it's always kind of this feeling of you gain something and then it's immediately attacked. Let's talk about those and then turn to how big tech is entering into the climate crisis with its own false claims of a pathway out of the problems we're facing.
Yeah, and the climate problem or the global problem of global heating has just been completely absent from the presidential campaign because Trump is against it, and that has made the opposition to the whole notion of global heating a basic part of the Republican position. And since the Democrats, they don't want to annoy anybody who's dependent on fossil fuels, like particularly in the state of Pennsylvania. So they don't say anything. They already know they're going to get the votes of people who are concerned about the issue. So nobody talks about it, even though we've had colossal instances of how global heating is killing people. Hurricane Helene is killing people in Asheville, North Carolina, hundreds of miles from the Atlantic Ocean. And I think lots of people are, even as things get measurably worse, are getting weary and tired and afraid of the whole issue.
The conspiracy thinking of Trump and his gang kind of takes center stage in the news. These claims that the federal government is only providing aid, is not providing aid to Republicans and can control the weather and has created the crisis to benefit Democrats. So there's so much noise of this sort that it's hard to focus, I think, for many people on the broader known dynamics. And even here in the Pacific Northwest, the blue Pacific Northwest, it's difficult to hold on to any kind of even partially progressive legislation. Can you say a bit about these four initiatives on the ballot in the state of Washington that aim to cut back in various ways the Climate Commitment Act, which has been seen as progressive and important in coordinating with other states, some of the requirements on companies that make it much more difficult to pollute? And it's not just a cap and trade scheme, which initially it appeared to be, apparently has more teeth to it.
Well, it has drawn the ire of big tech billionaires, as we've seen play out in San Francisco and in California, where the initiative process is alive and well. So we've had a man named Brian Haywood has financed these initiatives, which would take back laws that are not perfect, but they were passed with the dangers of global heating in mind, and they do make some measurably good steps toward combating doing what people can do. We'll see what happens. I have not kept up with polling, but there is a very powerful fight back program by a group called Defend Washington against all four of these initiatives.
And
So
they have a
we
website that's it's quite informative in laying out the problems with each of these initiatives. They all seem to play on fears around inflation and fears of technologies that can make a difference, like claiming that people will be forced to have heat water pumps in their houses or forced to do this or that. And the sense that we won't have our bacon is kind of,
we won't have our gasoline, this nation of gearheads. That's really a fundamental threat. Increased prices at the pump. That's always an argument. Another thing happening with the climate crisis is an exploitation of that crisis by big tech companies who are trying to revivify nuclear power. They're saying that AI and data centers are going to be monstrous gobblers up of energy, and that the only possible way we can float this wonderful thing of AI is to reactivate nuclear power.
Yeah, and just putting that in some context, the Climate Commitment Act does have within it $26 million for a proposal that would support implementing small modular reactors in the state of Washington and moving along the proposal process. And so that is a problem with how many of these, including the Inflation Reduction Act at the federal level, many of these clean power initiatives involve an obscene smuggling of nuclear power proposals into the warm and cozy folds of clean, safe, and cheap, none of which apply to nuclear power, including these designs for small modular reactors. But you're responding to a lot of the recent news that the big data centers and AI are going to require massive amounts of electricity, and the only way they can meet the moment, claim their supporters in the media, is to invest heavily in these small modular nuclear reactors.
Yeah, they're acting like AI is not at all new. It's think of Alexa and Siri. These are simply forms of AI are being used to justify the whole nuclear power thing, even though data centers will indeed require lots of power, but only a tiny fraction of all the power needs of the world are going to go to data centers. Most recently, projected global growth in electricity from 2023 to 2030. Terawatt hours of data centers are 223, but space cooling is going to be 697. New buildings will be 1,219. Electric vehicles, 854. Space heating, 486. So data centers are a tiny fraction of all the uses to which electricity will be put.
They do have a public relations problem as they've landed with a very heavy footprint in around towns and communities. It's kind of like Walmart exponentially bigger. And the local utility companies say we cannot provide your voracious needs for electricity, which are still substantial. So the big data argument is that we can have big data with small nuclear. It's the marriage of big and small, and have claimed that they'll be able to fire these data centers with their own power using small modular reactors, which is an absurd claim, a false claim, because these reactors don't exist. They're in a proposal form. It takes 10 to 20 years for these models to go from the development to operation phase or longer, and they are very expensive, and the problems are extremely consequential. So it seems to me like a bad faith public relations campaign, whatever electricity they need, which is substantial, to say it's going to come from nuclear.
What's new about small modular reactors? Anything at all?
It's the modular concept, and some people describe them in the marketing materials. They look like Legos, and you can get like a little starter kit. A community can get a few of them, and then you can build up with more unit. No community can build a light water reactor, those big towers that are way too expensive. I mean, Georgia customers will be paying for the reactor that finally started there after decades for a very long time. But the small ones seem to be cheap. But if you scale up to meet the demands that are and projected numbers that are required to make any difference in the climate crisis, the costs are phenomenal and are even higher, and the waste more problematic than the large light water reactors. Most of what's new is in the packaging and the branding. They really domesticated the imagery of reactors. That's always been haunted by its association with death from the very its very birth from the atomic weapons industry during World War II and Eisenhower's announcement of Atoms for Peace. Death has always been its shadow, so it's perpetually resurrecting itself as clean and modern, futuristic. These smart people will figure out all these problems down the road, even though people have been working on them since the Second World War on what to do with waste and have not figured out the problem.
So they don't know anything about anything more about how to handle this toxic waste, and they remain vulnerable to big events like tsunamis or earthquakes.
If you want a very tragic cautionary tale on that industry and the attempt to revive it, look at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, where this proposal is now afloat to launch a site in the Hanford area. It's such a project of deception and bad faith.
Jen, let me ask you a basic question. Are there any of these SMRs or small modular reactors alive today? I mean, has one actually been built anywhere?
Well, there are a few in the world. Apparently, China has a few and Russia has a few that have been hobbled with various problems. In the US, none have been approved. None of these proposals have been approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Here in Oregon, NuScale is a company that was very proud of being the leader of the pack, mainly because they had used a scaled-down version of the old light water reactor technology. And they had gotten some initial approval of a design, but they were not able to get customers. And that company has really been close to going under because they have not been able to get contracts. These are so far in the future from being realized. It's a hustle that distracts us from the real problems we face.
The cost estimates I've seen have been grossly larger than solar energy, which has now become extremely cheap because it's hit economies of scale. They've got factories now that can churn out continually advancing solar panels at ever cheaper and cheaper and cheaper prices.
And these
So
are known technologies, not perfect. There's a whole question of how much we should depend on generating more and more power for an ever increasing a world increasing in its demands for electricity, and how much we should look at where a lot of the energy consumption is going, conservation, and what kind of growth is really sustaining human well-being.
that's a whole other question. I mean, there are issues precisely of lifestyle, but then there are also issues of equity. Like there are huge chunks of the world that have nothing like the amount of cheap and available power that we have. And are we going to limit or restrict them in any way in their power development?
Yes, but the answer to that should not be exporting the worst of American technologies to those vulnerable communities around the world who have other models of innovation, of community-centered practices for generating electricity. There's a lot of innovative practices that have been marginalized by the glitter and glow of American technologies that have a long history of being foisted on other parts of the world to save them, to kind of technological saviorism.
Well, that's what we do. We create markets and then export to them whatever you're making. And I gather from your talk about atomic power and death and the relationship to weaponry that there must be a relationship between the increase, the modernization, quote unquote, in nuclear weaponry and this whole new urge to develop flawed systems of civilian electrical power.
The nuclear industry always claims that no, commercial reactors have nothing to do with nuclear weapons and the defense side until they're trying to get funds and are desperate for money. And then they say the defense industry needs us. It's the same engineers, the same scientists who know how to run these reactors, who you will depend on the defense side. But they are bound together. So it's, I think, not an accident that there is this massive push to renew nuclear and to win the public support for this as a climate solution, as the US is taking on a commitment of $1.7 trillion to upgrade our nuclear arsenal during a time where we should be promoting nuclear disarmament here and abroad.
Well, they're hitchhiking on climate fears, which are very real. Beneath the level of politics and what's going to happen in November, I think young people in particular, but everyone has a deep dis-ease, deep despair over the fact that they may be whacked by global heating. The unnerving general anxiety about it is what I think allows people to peddle something so shaky as new, quote unquote, nuclear power designs.
Okay, well, we'll talk with you on the other side after the election. We'll be revisiting this. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.